This is the Tame Aperture Podcast.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Hello, Hal, do you read me?
Do you read me, Hal? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you. I read you. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Come on down and jump into this shit.
You'll always have that. Sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Welcome to the Tame Aperture Podcast, where we talk about all things movies from first-time directors, indie films, art house, and much, much more. Today we're talking about the 2023 phenomenon, Saltburn. A student at Oxford University finds himself drawn into the world of a charming and aristocratic classmate who invites him to his eccentric family's sprawling estate for a summer never to be forgotten. I am Alan Martindale. I'm an editor, filmmaker, and along for the ride, as always, is our fearless leader, Gabe Beanendahl, filmmaker, film instructor, and film evangelist. Gabe, fuck you. I'm just going to say that right out of the gate. Do you know, we were talking before we started recording, do you know why we did this movie?
No.
Okay.
And after watching it, I'm questioning as to why we did it.
Because
I just gave the podcast over.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You are a son of a bitch, because we were, it was when we were recording our last episode, Sinister, and somehow we were talking, I don't know, about something, and this movie came up, and I told you how much I hate this film. And I was like, it was to the point where I was like, I don't usually feel this way, but I'm offended that this movie even exists. And you were like, that's what we're doing next. So
I wouldn't have said that.
100%. So this is all your fault, all the pain.
Well, let me just say, you in the intro said phenomenon. Is this a phenomenon film?
I was reading quite a bit about it, and
let's just say, what's the definition of phenomenon? It's a remarkable person, thing, or event.
So I think the reason why I use that term is because I was reading some stuff, and some people online were talking about how this was, whether or not you liked the movie, and I agree with this point, whether or not you liked the film, it got so much attention, and it was not a studio with prior IP. It wasn't based on anything. It was an indie film that got so much attention and had so many eyes on it, and people were talking about it. And it feels like it's got all the aesthetics. We'll talk about it. It's got all the aesthetics of a great movie, but I just don't think it is. So
that's an interesting point. I was doing a little research, and you did use that word, and I had to pull it up in the Oxford Dictionary.
Okay. And I'm sure I used it wrong.
No, it says remarkable person, thing, or event. So it could be a film.
I do remember.
Notice how I used Oxford, though.
Yeah, exactly. I just remember how everyone was talking about this movie when it came out. And I don't think it's necessarily for great things. I think it's for the shocking things. And we'll talk about it. And before we get into it, let's just mention, as always, tons of spoilers. So if you're interested in the film, go watch it, and then you can follow along. If you're not interested in the film, which I don't blame you at all, come on in, man. We'll spoil the shit out of it.
I mean, do you want me to jump in and just tell people what to do?
Yes, please.
Read the plot in Wikipedia and move on. Look, we'll get into things, and I'll start apologizing, because I understand the concept of filmmaking. And there's things I appreciate about the film. And that's fair, right? I can do both. I can say both things. But just read the Wikipedia summary and you'll be good.
Right. I mean, it's just, the acting's good. Cinematography's good. Direction's good. Like, but there's no point. There's zero point. There's no message. There's no, I'm sure there's a lot of subtext. And I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that, the writer director, what is her name? Let me pull it up real quick. I had it. The writer director, Emerald Fennell. And I think that's how you pronounce her last name, Fennell or Fennell. I am sure she had some serious deep meaning that she was trying to get across. I don't give a shit. I don't care to unpack it. And usually I love trying to unpack that stuff. I don't care at all.
Well, I'm reading her influences for the film. Would you like to hear some of her influences?
Yes, please.
Because you're talking about unpacking, you're talking about layers, you're talking about subtext.
Yeah.
Which I agree. I think she's probably, and she's phenomenally smart. She can write, she can direct. I get all that. Here's her some, and so do I want to watch the movie again? No. Clockwork Orange.
Okay.
Cruel Intentions.
Definitely see that.
And those are the only two I have.
There is one, and in the research that I did, there is one influence that she obviously took, but she claims she did not. And that is The Talented Mr. Ripley, which is a much better movie. I haven't seen it in a long time. I do remember enjoying it.
It's starring the one and only Matt Damon.
Matt Damon, Jude Law. Who else is in that? I can't remember. But it's Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it, so you know the acting's going to be phenomenal.
You know the acting's going to kick ass.
But it's pretty much that. Like it's from what I remember from The Talented Mr. Ripley, this feels like it's almost a reboot of that or a remake, you know? Like it's similar plot points.
Yeah, and if you're positioning the characters, where does Oliver, the character in Saltburn, fit in? Is he Ripley?
Yeah. Yeah, he's Matt Damon.
And so you're basically one for one-ing it across. It's like you got
what
Felix.
It feels like.
You got, yeah. I didn't think of that, but that makes sense.
It's pretty similar. Like he comes in, he gets infatuated with this dude to the point where you don't know, is he in love with him? Does he just want to be him? Does he just want what he has? And then basically just kills everyone off and takes over his life. You know, that's the plot of this movie. And the plot
that 100% is what this movie is.
And if you were to pitch that to me like an elevator pitch and say this is what it's about, I'd be like, that sounds badass, dude. That sounds awesome. I want to see this movie. But I don't know. It just goes nowhere and says nothing, which drives me crazy.
I wonder if it's the thing about it for me is like, do we care about Oliver enough to see him through the journey? And I think like that's the question, right? Like, I don't know about that character enough that I care deeply about his pursuits. I mean, she tries to make it where you sympathize with him, right? At the beginning, he's at Oxford. He's an outcast. He's not wanted. Felix comes in. Felix is the big man on campus, quote unquote, right? And pulls him under his wing. But yeah. I don't care about Oliver that much for some reason.
And this is, and I don't know. See, here's something that I've kind of been struggling with. Like, Barry Keoghan was in Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Go check it out. One of our favorite. We loved it.
Fantastic film. Go listen to our episode. Go watch that movie. He was in The Banshees of Inisherin. Fantastic. One of my favorite movies of that year.
Incredible.
Like, so good. But the thing is, he's so weird, dude. Like, he's so weird in all of these movies. And the reason why his characters work in those films is because he's so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to wonder, is that just who he is? Like, did he just get lucky to play these weird, creepy roles, that these uncomfortable roles, and they just kind of came to him? Because he's so good at that. And I just don't know. And I think to your point, I wonder if this role went to someone else, if we would have a little bit more sympathy or empathy or relatability to Oliver.
Well, maybe that's the tie-in to The Talented Mr. Ripley. Because I feel like with Matt Damon, at least there is a better relatability there. He doesn't feel as weird.
Yeah,
right?
100%. He awkward, but he can pull it off.
But he can pull it off, but not in the same. There's levels of awkwardness.
Yes, yes.
Keoghan, is it Keoghan? Did I say that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Keoghan.
Yeah, he's awkward, dude.
He's weird, man. He's a weird dude.
And, but he's also a hell of an actor.
He is, and that's the thing. Like, I almost don't want to know any more about him because right now the respect I have for him as an actor is it can't get much higher. And if I find out that's just who he is, I'm going to be so bummed. like what made the killing of a sacred deer so good, what made it work, was he was so uncomfortable. The whole movie's just uncomfortable because of him. And then obviously you're playing with our boy Colin Farrell, the eyebrows. And so that's gonna make everything infinitely better. But he's so awkward, dude.
Yeah.
So
that's the big thing for me. You look at the character Oliver in Saltburn. And one of the things I've been thinking about was a dad joke, which is like, how do I summarize the movie? It's more like slow burn.
I have that written down. I was going to say the same thing.
Dumbest joke ever. Everyone thought of it. It's easy.
I know. I was going to use that in the intro, but then I was like, no, dude, like that's just too simple. Like,
it's so simple. And I still did it. I don't care.
That's good. Saltburn, more like slow burn.
There's times where you build sympathy with characters and other times where you don't. And I just didn't build the sympathy. What's interesting, though, what I did like was later that it was revealed that you probably shouldn't have sympathy for him.
Exactly.
So that, I mean, in that trickery of the story, I think she succeeded. What I mean by that is like in the beginning of the film, it's 20 minutes of just nothingness to me. And yep. I'm really bored.
Yep.
And it's not driving anything. And then it's revealed that everything he was setting up to other people isn't true. The sympathy that we did have for him, we probably shouldn't have, because he came from places that he said he didn't. He came from a middle-class family. He had opportunity. He didn't have a mother who has mental disability. His father didn't die. He was lying the whole time.
Yep.
So I think there's a success there too, but it just still does. There's an attachment to characters that you can get, and I just didn't get the attachment.
I think that's well said. Well, let me ask you this. So I had seen the movie before. I saw it not too long after it was released on Amazon Prime. And so rewatching it, I didn't remember a ton of it. I just remember that I hated the film. And I didn't hate it as much this time around as I did the first time. But I still don't like it. But so when everything's revealed at the end, there wasn't much that was a surprise to me. Like, were you shocked? I know this fact that he was lying about his family, that's a twist. And I think that one worked. But when it's revealed later that he just killed the whole family, were you surprised? Was that a twist to you?
No.
Yeah, right?
Because really, to me, the big twist was the moment where Felix takes him back to his family home and he's trying to do something nice for him and then realizes that he's been lying to him all along. And that was a moment that I was like, oh, that's this guy's twisted.
Yeah, right.
So now nothing, if we know now that he's a twisted individual and he's going to be conniving and lying and all those other words we could use to describe him. If we know that now, nothing else is a surprise.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. For me.
The one thing that did that was like, oh, weird, was when he put the tack in Felix's bike, to orchestrate the entire film. Like, I didn't see that one coming, but the rest, how he killed Felix, how he killed the sister, like that all made, that was not a surprise. It's like, yeah, obviously. And the way they played it was like, it was a big twist, like it was Ocean's 11 showing how he pulled off the tricks. And it's just like, yeah, obviously this is what happened. Like, I'm not shocked at all. Okay, that's interesting. So,
I mean, he takes over the whole Saltburn estate, right? That's the idea at the end. And then he's dancing around naked and in his glory, in his success.
He is fully hanging dong in this film, man.
What's up with that, by the way? How would that? I'm just going to be honest. If you're an actor, you're just floating that thing out there.
You're just hanging dong, man. Like, so should we talk about some of the awkward, uncomfortable moments that really kind of blew this film up?
I'd love to hear what you think. If we start from the beginning and we walk through it,
okay,
what's the first thing that threw you off or pushed you away from wanting to continue to watch?
I mean, it's the bathtub scene, right? Like, I mean, other than how slow it is at the beginning.
Which one? Because there's multiple bathtub scenes in the film.
The infamous one where Felix is in the tub jerking it. And then as soon as he's out of there and the water's draining, Oliver goes in and starts licking up the water and slurping it up. And that is like the most disturbing, gross thing I've seen in a film in a long time. That was the first one.
Maybe that's now looking back on it. And once again, I'm only giving these reviews after one watch.
Right.
And in all fairness, as we know with filmmaking, there's a lot more layer and subtext to everything. It's not one watch isn't going to give you all the information you need, right?
Right.
To make a real fair like assessment as a filmmaker. But the reality is that was disgusting. And also, maybe that should have been the first clue that Oliver was a weirdo.
Yeah, without a doubt. That was definitely. And then the thing that's weird for me, and I think this is probably done on purpose, and I didn't notice it until watching it the second time, is that his whole character and personality changes after that scene. Like before, he's just kind of like meager and kind of meek and like, oh, hi, thank you. Nice to meet you. And then after that, like he is the scene with the sister where she's outside smoking a cigarette and he comes down and, you know, she's on her period and he just goes to town. Like, I mean, just go watch it. I'm sure you can YouTube that scene. I don't really want to talk about it because it's pretty gross. But like he starts being more forward. Starts taking more initiative in his plan, and the first time I watched it, I'm like, this isn't the same guy we saw in the very last scene. Like, why all of a sudden is he now forceful? And there wasn't a lot of, I would have liked to have seen a buildup of him, like getting a little bit, little by little more confident in being a weirdo.
Yeah. I wonder if she's trying to showcase that. Now I think about it, I go, oh, this is how she's taking the steps to bringing him there, but
I think
the jump is pretty drastic.
Here's my theory. I think once he slurped up Felix's ejaculate water, then he became Felix in his mind. And that's when he became more forceful and forward. That's my theory. I don't know. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it was just bad writing, but I don't think so. I think I do think, as much as I dislike this film, I do think she knew what she was doing.
I was going to say, I don't think there's any. Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think there's any doubt that. And once again, this is a one-time view, so it's not entirely fair to blow out an entire assessment on it. But I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense. And I also agree with you. Like, she knows what she's trying to do. She knows what she's trying to say. Matter of fact, I ran across. Do you know who Drew Goddard is?
Yes.
Drew Goddard is a writer. He's a director. He wrote films like The Martian, like big movies. And he had said something that I thought was interesting. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, though, Alan, because it alludes to what you're talking about here with like her knowing what she's trying to do, et cetera, which I also agree with. However, I disagree with some of his additional thoughts here. Here's what he said. By the way, it says filmmakers Drew Goddard and Robert Eggers.
Oh, okay. I love Robert Eggers. He's one of my favorites.
We walked away from The Lighthouse as huge fans.
And Nosferatu's great. The Witch is great. Even The Northman's great.
So here's what Drew and Robert say. Can I throw this off at you?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Named among their favorite films of 2023. Goddard said, this is a group of artists who feel safe and protected and emboldened to do truly dangerous work. This only happens when you have a director in complete command of her craft.
I mean, don't disagree with that.
That's actually fair.
Yeah, for sure. I do think she's a very talented filmmaker. I just don't like this one like at all.
It says, I'll continue. There's a few more things here. He says, you can feel emeralds just out of frame, lifting them ever upwards, upwards, upwards. It is staggering, fearless filmmaking. And thank God they've asked us to dance with them while the house burns right down around us all.
Okay, so
the last part's a little much for me. I like Drew Goddard. I've actually met him once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we did a screening when I was teaching in LA of The Martian, and he came to do Q&A. And I was teaching there, so I met him. The last one's a little much for me, though. And thank God they've asked us to dance with them. I didn't dance. So
No.
There wasn't a lot of dancing happening in my viewing of this particular movie.
There's a lot of watch checking. I check my watch a lot. The last part about burning the house down, I'm actually glad you read that, because this is a slow burn that never catches fire for me. Like, nothing burns. Like, not, it's not, nothing is shot. I don't know, man. Like, it, to me, it just, there's got to be a point. There's got to be a message, especially in a film like this. And to me, it feels like she gets so lost in the pretension and the pretentiousness and the nuances that I think she's lost track of whatever she was trying to say. Like, in the end, I mean, you feel like this is going to be a commentary on different classes, the upper class and the upper crust. And in the end, it almost feels like it's just the opposite, where she's saying, well, yeah, these rich, you can't let poor people around you or they're going to kill you and steal your house. You know, like, it's, what are you trying to say? Like, is that your message? I don't understand.
Well, he's dancing around naked in the house that he inherited. Right.
Yep.
Based on his trickery. So yeah. It would have actually, you say that, and it's like the house burns down right around us all. I agree with you. I don't know that the house ever really burned down. It didn't really. It would have been more interesting to see Oliver like outside the actual Saltburn Manor trying to like start a fire in the corner of the house.
Right, right.
Like, and something. Actually burn it down.
Right.
Not just dance around naked because he succeeded.
Yeah, it's I don't get it. I don't understand what the ultimate point is. I mean, there's a lot of themes of, you know, obsession and love and wanting and desire and all that kind of stuff. And I think, you know, there are conversations to be had about that. I don't want to have them, but there are conversations to be had about that. I just don't know what the point is. Like,
well, I feel like a lot of people interpret it as a satire.
Yeah. I could definitely see that. I have seen this described as a dark comedy.
Which is interesting, because I found nothing comedic about it, but maybe that's just my general position towards comedy, which is different than what she's trying to showcase.
Yeah.
Like, it's not this. I don't have, maybe we just don't, you know how people have certain flavors of comedy?
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have her flavor.
If this is a comedy, I certainly don't share that humor. It's like they're making fun of these wealthy people, and rightly so. Like, you know, their discussions are so surface level, and they don't want to address anything unpleasant, and they want to just whisk things away that are uncomfortable or ugly. And you, like, that's a good place to start. Like, that, let's build a foundation on that if you're trying to say something about that. But then at the end, it's like the rug pulling me, like, oh, just kidding, they were the good guys. This middle class guy, he's a bad guy. And it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't even know what more. I feel like I'm rambling because I'm trying to make sense of something I can't make sense of.
What does Oliver do now with the estate? That's the thing. What does he do with the inheritance? Like, what is she trying to say that he would potentially do? I mean, is he going to change, or is he just going to now become, you know, the extravagant, you know, rich upper crust? I don't know.
Well, do you know how expensive it is going to be to maintain that place and pay taxes on that place? And like it's not like you just got something and your life's set. Like, now you just got a bunch of headaches, man. Like, it's miserable.
This is when the real estate background of Alan comes in. He starts talking about property taxes.
Exactly.
And maintenance of the large estate, which is true. It's all true.
One thing I didn't quite get. Did he kill the father too?
No, because my thought was the father just died.
Okay,
because he read about it. I think he reads about it in the newspaper.
I think so. And then,
but then he strategizes to get the mother at the cafe.
Right, right.
So that was, I think, and once again, I could be wrong. It was happenstance, and it propelled his plan, because now he can go get the mother and knock her off.
Yeah.
Not knock her up.
Okay. That's what I
thought.
Because
there was a weird sexuality between the two, too. So
the whole thing has, it's just weird sexuality everywhere. And then when Felix dies, talking about weird sexuality, he starts having sex with Felix's grave, which is.
Yeah, that
strange.
Scene was like, I was trying to figure out what was going on in terms of. I mean, once again, now that we look at it in hindsight, as we're discussing it, I go, oh, yeah, we know this character's psycho. That's
right.
Crazy. That's crazy shit. you're Norman Bates. And I didn't, but in the moment of watching the movie, you're just like, that's weird as shit.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, even Norman Bates, again, go listen to our episode on Psycho. I love that movie. Even Norman Bates is more sympathetic than Oliver is. And I don't know if it's just Barry Keoghan's just weird, dude. Like, just
or the character, like, why is he so hell-bent on not telling the truth? Is it just for the manipulation for the riches?
Yeah, okay. You know what? I think you're hitting on something. I think I've been trying to figure out why I dislike this movie so much. I think that's a big part of it is, what is his motivation? What
There's
is
no
the
motivation.
Point? I think you just nailed it. Like, I don't, what is the point of telling a story? I don't know. Like, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? Why is he doing this? You know,
and
like,
maybe I'm thinking, okay, he comes from a good family. We saw his parents.
Yep.
They seem like very nice people. So he's raised by in a good upbringing. Is he bitter about that himself?
I don't know. I
or
don't
is
I,
he or is he just bitter about the fact that he can't fit in with the group at Oxford at the beginning? There's just a weird social, you know, now we're talking about these social dynamics, and maybe that's what it is. And so as a result of not fitting in early on, he's going to manipulate this whole strategy. That's pretty crazy still.
Well, and the mom does mention that he was never able to make friends when he was young, too.
So there's a social awkwardness and there's a social commentary that she's putting into it about not just class, because there's classes. Because the class, he's middle class. He came from a good family.
Right.
But the social dynamics.
I think that was the point where I think I wanted to like this movie throughout. But I think when they got to the parents' house and we saw that they're middle class, like, he's not a poor kid who just wants, you know, a greatness. It's like, I think that's the part it completely lost me. Like, I was already teetering before. Now I'm like, wait, what is the point then? Why? Like, he's comfortable. He doesn't need any help. He's got money. Like, why are we doing this? What is the fucking deal here, man?
Which is like, which brings me to like a question that I wrote down here. It said that I wrote for the ending. And we talked about this a little bit, but I was curious to hear your thoughts. Like, is that ending earned and is it validated? Like, is there something fulfilling about the ending? That's the other thing. Like, I don't walk away going, yeah, he got him.
Right.
Like, I know that's not always how you have to walk away from a story, but like, why do I care about him? And I never cared about him much in the beginning, and now I don't care about him after he manipulated everybody. So,
yeah.
Like, was the ending earned? For me, not so much. It just raised a lot more questions, and maybe that's what she's trying to do.
Probably. It probably is.
Which I'll say this. I hate.
I agree.
I just don't like that. But that's just my 80s kid movie, you know. I want resolution. I want a little bit
I want some sort of ending. Bad ending, good ending, fine. Just give me an ending.
Yes.
Like, it's crazy, man. It's just, I don't get it. I don't know, man. I'm sure there are people out there listening to this right now that are so angry because this is a very divisive film. People either love it or they hate it is what I've seen. So I'm sure there are people pretty pissed off right now. And if you're one of them, please let us know, man. Like, how do you feel about this film? Why do you like it? Why do you not like it? What are your theories? Because I just don't care to dive deep into it by giving another watch.
Yeah, but even if you look at films that if you were to compare in style and feel, you know, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, things of that nature, there is resolution at the end. I mean, there's like a there's a resolution that it's not just a naked man dancing in a big mansion who manipulated a high class society. And maybe that's fulfilling for people. It's like, oh, the middle class beat the upper class. I don't know.
I know.
It's not fulfilling for me, but maybe for others it is.
Maybe it is. I don't know. And I'm sure if I had a better understanding of what she was trying to do and say, I'd probably appreciate it more, but I'm just too dumb.
So. It's something, there's a satire there going on about proximity to wealth and wealth being the thing that, you know, draws, that empowers our culture, you know, and then he's now in proximity and then he manipulates and then takes over and now he is the wealth.
And actually, I think if she would have just leaned into that and kept going with that, I think that's good. Like one way or the other, just lean into it. It feels like she's close to saying something, then she pulls back. And it's just frustrating. Like you said, I want it wrapped up. I want, like, give me some sort of resolution. And
do you think would you even put this in a genre or a category of comedy?
No, I wouldn't. No, satire maybe, but not comedy.
Satire, yes, I agree. But comedy?
Nah, I don't. No, the mother, I think, is the closest thing we get to any sort of comedy.
Agreed. Rosamund Pike. I think she envelops that character really well, of the posh, unrelatable, distant, unemotional person who's been given everything.
Exactly. And also, I will also say the father is, I don't know if it's unintentional, but he is hilarious too. Just the way he looks, like his hair's all crazy. He's like a little kid who just has all the money in the world. And he is just, to me, he's pretty funny too.
So there are funny moments to it, although I'll have to disagree with Nicholas Barber from the BBC, because I have a quote to read you.
Okay.
He says, I enjoyed the outrageous laugh out loud punchlines.
What?
That's what he said.
Were there any punchlines?
Wait. I'll read it again. Nicholas Barber from the BBC said, I enjoyed the outrageous laugh out loud punchlines.
Oh, dude. Okay.
So this could be culturally a thing, because maybe I'm not catching on to something because
that's England. A good point. That's a good point. maybe you have to have British sensibilities to really understand the humor. I don't know. That's a good point.
It could be, because I didn't see any laugh out loud punchlines.
Yeah.
I saw caricatures that I thought were funny, like we talked about with the mom. But I didn't like laugh out loud. What?
No, I didn't even hear a single punchline in the whole film. So I don't know.
I'll say this. Then he follows up and says, but felt that Fennell, the director, is prone to fumble plot twists.
Hmm.
I know he gives a little compliment and then he throws the sickle at her.
Okay. Here's a question. Could he have been being sarcastic with the, punchline part?
It could be.
I don't know.
He said he enjoyed it, though.
I mean, she's literally been nominated for Oscars. I think she won an Oscar. So,
for this film?
No, for Promising Young Woman.
Her first film.
Her first film, yeah.
Yeah, and I have yet to see that, so I won't
see it. I haven't seen it either. But I think it was nominated for Best Picture, Best Direction, and it won... I think Best Director. I don't know. But it won a third.
And I can't, once again, I think, and this is a fair statement, I don't think I can go in downplaying that she can write and direct.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
As a filmmaker, she can do that, and she's good. But does it land in her sophomoric effort? Maybe not, for me.
Nah, dog. Definitely not.
I'm not rewatching it.
I'm not rewatching it either. So we're not just completely shitting on this thing. I think the acting is fantastic. The cast is fantastic. The cinematography was beautiful. I mean, some of those shots, especially in the maze, the hedge maze.
Yes.
Was like that Minotaur statue was fantastic. Like it looks really good. It's got all the elements of a fantastic movie, except for the all important story.
I think that's the missing piece. And I'll say this, and I agree with all that. Cinematography is beautiful, all those things. It has Kubrickian vibes.
Yep.
And I'm a Kubrick head. But it doesn't land. Like, I think about it and I go, okay, I can see the influence. If you're saying Clockwork Orange, or if you're saying even Barry Lyndon, if
Yep.
you're talking about those things, that makes sense. The story, though, especially Barry Lyndon, like the class system in Barry Lyndon, that's all that is. But it lands differently the way Kubrick did it. And so I think he had a little more grasp on the story, and she just doesn't land it for me. And once again, she's probably smarter than both of us, and so has way more subtext that we're not discovering.
No doubt.
Especially on a first view. I mean, which I'm only going to give it. So.
Well, and that's saying something because typically we like to dive into these movies when we cover them and watch them, multiple times if we can. So the
If I
fact that
have
we're
a
both like never, never again.
yes. If I have a choice, I'm going to go back and watch. Like I can rewatch A Clockwork Orange. I can rewatch Barry Lyndon, although not as much as A Clockwork Orange. And so there's these tiers, and so this one falls below both of those.
I agree. I mean, A Clockwork Orange, I can see like there are disturbing parts of both those movies. Though the disturbing parts in A Clockwork Orange are far more poignant and purposeful to me than what's in here. But
And
what do I know?
I think it lands more on social commentary. And you think about that film being made 40 years ago ish.
Yep.
It still has cultural buoyancy,
It does. It
which
does.
is crazy. So not that I'm trying to compare them, but will Saltburn have cultural buoyancy later, 30 years from now? I don't think so. I just
Well,
don't.
I mean, it can't get much worse. Like it's.
So that's a pretty big distinction, and we're obviously putting her up against high stakes with Kubrick. But anyway,
Yeah, that's probably not very fair
that's
to
not fair.
compare
We're
to
like, hey,
Kubrick.
go up against Kubrick.
You're not as good as Kubrick. You should just quit. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of our thoughts. I don't know what more I can even say without beating this dead horse.
The only thing I'll say is, like you had mentioned, some of the things I love the filming locations as a nerd. It's like they really locked in this beautiful location. I don't,
Yeah.
this is somewhere in obviously England, Northamptonshire. Beautiful, but a
It
beautiful
is.
estate.
It is.
Cool location, cool filming, cool cinematography. Story doesn't hit. Don't give a shit about the characters.
It did spawn a TikTok trend of rich kids dancing around their giant mansion houses, which, I mean, I don't totally understand the point of the film, but to me, that kind of misses the point of the film.
I was just gonna say, I think they just went right into it. They fell
Yeah.
for
Yeah, it's kind of like Fight Club in that way. Like people
it.
think it's like a blueprint of how to be masculine, and it's really just commenting on how how not to be masculine.
If that's the case, and that TikTok went viral, that trend, maybe she achieved her point.
Dude,
You know?
that I mean that's kind of that would be the ultimate like artist thing right there.
Because everybody's looking back at that going, what a bunch of idiots. Like, what are you doing? It premiered at Telluride. I think that's interesting. That's a good high quality film festival distributed by Amazon and Warner Brothers in the United Kingdom. And they made this thing, Alan, for 21 million. Or no, sorry. They made this thing for.
Okay, this is AI, so who knows? The budget for Saltburn is estimated to be between $10 million and $38 million. What? That seems like a pretty big fucking range.
Okay, that's huge. 10 to 38 million. And so, when you're looking at financial success, maybe not great, at least at the box office upon release, let's say it was 38 million, they grossed 21.
Huh.
Not great.
Not great, but it could have been 10 million. Okay.
But that doesn't include whatever Amazon purchased it for.
True.
So, I'm not one to be like, oh, the money equates to the quality of the film, but in this case it might. If it was 38 million and they only made 20 in the box office, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. But and the thing is, I think, because I don't know if this had a theatrical release in America. It may have had a little a limited one, but I just remember people when this was released on Amazon, people just talking about it all over the place.
Yeah, maybe that box office was just for your United Kingdom.
Saltburn grossed $11.4 million in the United States and Canada and $9.7 million
yeah,
in
so
other
it was
territories
both.
For a worldwide total of $21.1 million.
Yeah, so it was both. So not great. But once again, you can't equate box office success to artistry in some in some sense, right?
Right.
That's not entirely fair. Okay, well, let's do a movie wrap before we get into Google reviews and our reviews. Give me a one word, not one word, like a one sentence, a few words summary of the film. This is called Movie Wraps.
Okay. Now, you want an accurate summary or...
I'll give you bonus points if you can rhyme it with Saltburn.
Okay, so I gotta make it rhyme.
You could. I mean, I'll give you bonus points for it.
Okay. I don't think I'm gonna do that. I'm not smart enough.
I'm not either. I just was throwing it out there as an option.
Saltburn is a cheap knockoff. Now, I don't want to say cheap. Saltburn is an ineffective knockoff of The Talented Mr. Ripley. And it is not a thriller, not a drama, not a satire, not a comedy, not a horror film. It just exists. That's what I got. That's all I got. I don't know what else to say.
I think the idea that it just exists is pretty good. I asked, okay, now in return, while you were going through your, one sentence, few word review, I asked AI to give me a Saltburn review in 5 words.
Okay.
None of which I agree with.
Okay.
Well, seductive, deranged satire of obsession. See, this is where I am not on par with everybody else. The obsession thing for me with Oliver did not land.
I agree with that 100%.
It just didn't land.
Yeah. Obsession, it feels like obsession would be a singular thought, a singular motive, and not like you don't know what he wants, you know? Like I don't get it. Yeah.
I would say Salt. I'm going to go back to my original Saltburn. This is like a Simpsons joke or something even not as good as
like
a Simpsons joke.
A later season Simpsons joke.
Yeah. Saltburn, more like slow burn. Don't
Beautiful.
Watch that.
Beautiful.
Read the Wikipedia summary.
Exactly.
And move on. Find more things on Amazon Prime to watch.
Exactly. There's plenty.
Oh my gosh. That said,
I do like the idea of an indie film generating buzz, whether you like the movie or not. It's fun to see, filmmakers out there making films that they love and they're passionate about. And I think we need more of that. So
I agree with that. I will say at the beginning, you had introduced this as a phenomenon.
Yeah. There may have been a little bit of hyperbole
going on. That's fair. But here's my other review. I'd say go watch Phenomenon with John Travolta. It'll be a better use of your time.
Is that I've never seen that. Is it? I'm not a fan of John Travolta. So is
I don't know. That's just my quote.
Yeah, okay, perfect.
Go watch that instead. Also, okay. It's on Prime.
It is on Prime.
So,
and is this another one of those classic things where I say it should have been an hour less or something? Like, could it have been saved?
Look, if you Siskel and Ebert, two thumbs up for Phenomenon with John Travolta and the must-see movie of the year from the National News Syndicate. So, and it has a hot soundtrack. It features Eric Clapton, Change the World.
Wow. Beautiful. Very, very 90s. All of that's very 90s.
So 90s. Good times. Okay. Should we read do you have a Google review?
I don't have Google review, but I have two Letterboxd reviews.
Love it.
This movie fucking sucked, and I only put 2 stars because Elordi was good here. That's it. That's the whole review.
I like it. I'm for it.
I agree. I mean, not the 2 stars, but I like Jacob Elordi was really good.
It would have been half star, but yeah. You give the extra half because Elordi was good.
And that we could actually probably learn something from that review. Like there are good things here, but
no, for sure. We're not shitting on it entirely, just a little bit. Go watch Phenomenon with John Travolta.
I just exited away.
That's like that as a filmmaker, that's a slap in the face. Maybe I shouldn't say that. I'm like, don't watch this. Watch Phenomenon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're the evangelist here. You're the one who's like,
that was a mean-spirited suggestion.
Okay, this one from Letterboxd is a half star. And it says, first, I do not blame Jacob Elordi or the cinematographer. In fact, I think this would be nigh unwatchable without them. One point, and I think they're talking about taking off points here. One point for how funny it was that Oliver was upper middle class. Okay, never mind. One point for how funny it was that Oliver was upper middle class. I laughed, and then I got serious, and I got scared and uncomfortable. It's good. Subtract 1 point for the pacing / usage of shock value to replace a real purpose. Do not come to my town. I want to be spoon-fed a real story. Jacob Elordi is so hot and rich that it drove the poor person crazy and the poor people will steal your house is not compelling. Half point for that one scene where Jacob Elordi is on the grass and then he looks at the camera. Plus half point for party Jacob Elordi. That changed lives. Oh, my God. Perfect opportunity for class commentary, and for some reason, it's freaked out. It's freaked out and does the opposite. Subtract 1 more half point because writing this made me remember, and it pissed me off.
This is a lot of math for me to do. I know. Half points, points. I'm getting confused.
What I took from this was this person loves Jacob Elordi. Loves him.
Yes.
And
as much as Oliver does.
As much as Oliver does. And doesn't quite know how to write a full-on review.
Yeah. I think they were Oliver in disguise.
I think so. But I don't blame them for subtracting more points because writing this review reminded them of the movie and it pissed them off. I get that.
That's a good t-shirt.
That is a good. You know what? That's going on the list.
I wrote this review. It pissed me off so much. Yeah.
I'll
say this. Siskel and Ebert, 3 out of 4 stars.
So, jeez, man.
I mean, that's the review. It's actually not obviously Siskel and Ebert, but the brand. Rotten Tomatoes, 72%. And for the audience. So they had a fresh.
What?
They had a fresh at 72. Audience, 79.
So critics, 72. Audience, 79.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to believe that all these critics are writing these reviews in good faith. But also, could this be a case of just wanting to be viewed as smarter than they are and pretending that they get it when they really don't?
It could be. I don't know that they don't get it. There's nothing. That's the point of the movie. There's nothing to get other than, I don't know. It's not that deep. Maybe it is. And once again, I think that's a shitty ass score for 72.
I agree. 100%.
IMDb. What do you think IMDb is?
Oh, I did see it, and this does surprise me.
7. 7 out of 10.
That's crazy.
Okay. Here we go.
I think it just comes down that I'm really stupid.
I mean, there's some valid points there. We got some good acting. We got some beautiful cinematography. It's shot really well. Really good actors. I don't think there's anything. And good direction. And there's moments that have good writing. But, like, ultimately, the thing about the movies is I want to feel something.
Yep.
For me. and I didn't quite feel anything.
I think that is very well said.
What do you what do you what's your team aperture rating here on Saltburn, Alan?
My rating, and this includes me enjoying the cinematography and acting and direction and all that stuff, I'm still going 4.8 Hung Dongs.
AKA 4.8 Olivers.
Exactly.
Wait, 4.8 Little Olivers.
Little Olivers.
Okay, 4.8. Interesting. I'm going to be right in your wheelhouse. I'm going to be right there. I'm going to go a little higher. I'm going to take into consideration. Now my weak film apologist will come out. And also, it's only one viewing, and I always say that. It's only fair. It's like I've seen it once, so that's not, you know, entirely fair for me to go in hardcore entirely. If we did a recast of this after we rewatched it a couple times, maybe that score changes. It could drop. I'm going to go 5.3 Wannabe Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yes. Okay.
5.3. Because it's one of those things where I walked away and I go, saw it. I didn't necessarily hate on it, but I didn't, even though if you listen to this podcast, you're like, that's all you did the whole time is shit on it. Not true. But I didn't walk away going, I felt something and I'll rewatch this. We always talk about rewatchability and it's just not there. So 5.3 is right in that middle ground.
Okay. That is going to do it for our Saltburn coverage. Thank God we will never have to watch this movie again. Thanks for listening to the Tame Aperture podcast. Go to tameaperture.com. You can find all of our past episodes and there's a ton of them and we still have more in the can that we're going to put up. So, for Gabe, I'm Alan's, the Tame Aperture Podcast, signing out.
The Tame Aperture Podcast is produced by Dutch Angle Pictures in association with Studio B Productions. Listen, watch, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and YouTube.